Well, next hour, it's called Dreaming Heaven. Lee McCormick joins me. We'll talk about that. This hour, we'll take your phone calls, questions, and bully stories for Dr. Peter Bragan. This email in from Ismael. He says, George, in high school, we had a bully. He cut off the tip of another kid's finger with a saw in wood shop. He was suspended for one day. One day! And when he came back to school, he then pushed a friend of mine. I chased him for about a mile. All the other kids followed us. He started crying, stopped, turned like he was going to try to swing at me, but he did not. I felt bad for him, but he never bullied anyone at school again, but he did drop out. Okay, we'll take your calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Peter Bragan with us, Dr. Peter Bragan, and your phone calls as well. Peter, by the way, I want to thank you for really the amount of time you've put in giving us your advice and expertise on this program during the hours and the news items. I really appreciate it. Thank God you're not billing us at your doctor rate, huh?
Listen, I deeply appreciate this being on here. You know, my book, While I'm an American, which is, you know, the psychology of living like our founders, mm-hmm. living a good life, it just skyrocketed after you mentioned it on the last show. So I'm profoundly grateful to be on your show.
Peter, the bullies, I was looking at some videos with the producer, Tom, that on YouTube. I remember the little one where this little skinny kid was pounding this heavier kid, and this poor kid was just taking these punches. Then he had enough, and he picked up this little guy and slammed him to the ground. I mean, he almost broke his hip, but he was pushed too far. And I think that's a possibility too. You know, when we talk about the victim, you know, we talked about the shootings and things like that. At what point does somebody snap?
Well, I don't think that's predictable. You know, I'm a psychiatrist, and I'm going to be the first to tell you that we're no better than anybody else at judging when somebody's going to, you know, become violent. It's very unpredictable. It's circumstantial. It's based on things going on inside that person's head. And, you know, we can say general things, you know, like the weaker the family upbringing was, the less ties the person has and less meaningful life, less principles, the more readily they may break. But it's so hard to judge, to get into another person's shoes and to judge what their suffering is like.
Are some government leaders bullies?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
I'm a little fearful to get into all that. I don't want to.
But they're out there, aren't they?
Oh, my God. Well, look, this is what I have found in general. I'll give you a principle of life in general, is that people in power want to have power. And a part of that often is being a bully. And being a politician is essentially just a route to power.
Sure
it isn't. It isn't a good deed of our founders anymore. It's not like the gentleman farmer is, you know, going to spend a few years in the legislature and return home. These are all careers now, which I think the founders were very afraid of, and I think they're power careers.
I think you're right. Let's take some calls here, Peter. We'll pick it up, first of all, by going west of the Rockies. Tom's in Santa Rosa, California. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Oh, George, thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Glad you're doing this show. Doctor, thank you, too, for your work. I wanted to say, when I was a kid, you know, I came up rather violently, but people never really told me what I could do. But instead, until I was in my 30s and I had gotten into 12-step programs, I got to a counselor. I went for some outside help. And my girlfriend had given me a book that was called Handling Your Ups and Downs, which really, and she said, you need to read this. And it was really written for kids. And it said, when you get angry, you shouldn't do this, but you can go, you know, punch your punching bag, and you can go do these other things. And in another book that my psychologist gave me, I say psychologist because I don't really care for psychiatrists, the book was Your Perfect Right was the title of it. And I learned a lot from that book, too. Of like assertiveness training. And I used to joke about assertiveness training because I didn't know that there was a difference between being aggressive and being assertive or being abusive. I knew how to be abusive, what do I need assertiveness training for?
Yeah.
Until I finally understood what that was about.
Big difference.
Yeah, oh, a huge difference in the better results you get. And the way I feel so much better about myself today, so many years later, when I look in the mirror and I see how much I've changed.
Do you find yourself, Tom, that you still have to hold back a little bit?
Oh, earlier today, I had one of those moments, and I realized how upset I was getting with this computer trying to get it running. I said, wait, I got to go off. I went out for a walk, and I came back, and I laughed. You know, I realized how upset I was getting. And once I started laughing, all of a sudden, bam, got it fixed, and it was working. And it was my own. I got in my own way again.
You sound like Mike the Hitman in Breaking Bad.
Well, you know, I worked over 10 years at the port over in Cleveland. Well, it doesn't matter. I just to say, I've been around a little bit, you know, and I thought that it would be a good thing to bring out on your show the things you're discussing, that for someone that does have a temper and is used to being angry, a different way, to learn other ways to process your anger and how to use it and in a socially acceptable manner besides just smacking somebody in the head.
That's a good point. Peter, that's a good recommendation and good advice.
Yeah, Tom, that's a great call. And you know, the 12-step program, you know, is a moral principled program. It's all about getting your life in order. And that's what folks need, one form or another of getting your life ethically and psychologically in order. And I think that's a marvelous distinction he made, you know, between actually, you know, putting yourself forward in life versus being violent in life. And it's a hard distinction for all of us, by the way. I think it's worth sharing that I don't think there's a human being that doesn't struggle with violent impulses in one way or another. I think anybody who says they've never had a violent impulse is either very suppressed or kidding themselves, because it's our legacy. I mean, this is what comes from our human nature, which is on the one hand so social and on the other hand so violent. And it's our job to tame ourselves and as adults to help children learn, you know, to be civilized.
Okay, next up, Elisa in Portland, Oregon, wild card line. You weren't a bully, Elisa, were you?
No, not me. I have a question for Dr. Bragan there.
Sure.
I have a friend of mine that's been terrorized by gang stalking for 6 years now, and he's moved all over the country to get away from him, and I'm not sure what I can do or how I can help him, and just calling on his behalf.
Okay. Peter, go ahead.
Did she say gang?
Gang stalking.
Yes, gang stalking.
Well, I mean, this requires a legal consult. And a criminal consult and not a psychiatric consult.
And let me ask you,
that's
Lisa.
Just it. They're trying to make him think he's crazy.
Who? The gang?
No, my friend.
Well, no, but who's trying to make your friend feel crazy? The gang?
Yes.
Stalkers? Are they chasing him all over the place? You said around the country. I mean, wherever he goes, they show up. What happens?
Yes, that's exactly what happens. They break into his house.
Let me ask you, why are they after him?
He doesn't know, and that's the whole frustration of it, is he has no idea.
Are they trying to hurt him physically?
Yes. They're trying to kill him.
Okay, that is a police matter, Peter. You're absolutely right about that. There's probably something else going on.
Well, I wonder, are you really sure, caller, that this is real?
Yes, it is. It's been going on for about 6 years. Maybe can I have him email you?
I don't think it's a psychiatric psychological intervention that he's looking for.
No, it's a police situation, isn't it, Peter?
Yeah, from the way it's being described.
Yeah, okay, at least that would be the best advice. I mean, they're chasing him. They're trying to kill him. That's
But I really, you know, from the very, issue. This kind of a general that they're everywhere he goes, I just don't know even if it's real.
Now, so. Some people, Peter, hear these imaginary footsteps, right? That people are chasing them, they're being stalked, they're being all that stuff. And sometimes it's not happening. What do these people do? I mean, how do you get them help?
Well, it always goes back to a lot of trauma in childhood. And if the person especially has been so overwhelmed by childhood that they can't deal with it, they'll instead find other explanations for the terror and the fear that they're going through. So instead of confronting the horrors of what they were perpetrated against them when they were very young, and unfortunately sometimes a lot of abuse is pre-verbal, so it's very, very hard to get back and even discover it. But it's a projection. It's, you know, it's that it's so horrible what you've been through as a kid that you're not able to say, okay, this was done to me by my mother, my father, my big brother, my uncle, a bully. It's just too terrifying to even deal with those folks, even in the interior of your own mind. And so the defenses that the human beings that we develop very, very commonly is to think we're being abused by other people, often vague other people,
right,
sometimes specific other people.
Let's go to Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. It's Bob's turn on Coast to Coast. Bob, you're on with Dr. Peter Bragan. Go ahead.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
Thank you for letting me talk.
Very well.
I just got a little kind of short story on dealing with bullies. Back in seventh grade, I've always been a short guy. And this bully guy, he was towered over everybody, always knocking books out of people's hands and this and that.
Geez.
One day, he just kept bothering me all the time. And there's a friend of my family's in our church. Used to be a semi-pro boxer, and he took me aside one day, got permission from my dad. He showed me a couple of little techniques and things to look for in a match, and we got confronted, got challenged, and after school met the guy, and was able to defend myself, puffed his eye up so bad he couldn't come back to school for about 3 or 4 days. But the whole bottom line was dealing with the bully, and I was able to deal with the bully, and from that day on, he never bothered anybody else in the rest
good,
of school
good for
all
you.
Way through ninth grade.
Good for you. Now, I wonder whatever happened to him. Bob, I wonder how he turned out in terms of being an adult. Who knows?
Well,
huh?
Unfortunately, it was a real sad ending. When I came back from Vietnam, okay, this guy was still a kind of more turned into alcoholic and stuff like that.
Okay.
And when I broke his nose, that septum, or what they call that one part in the nose.
When he was a kid,
he kind of went to sleep one, like how kids go to sleep in class where they put their heads inside their arms,
yeah,
and forehead on their arms.
Yeah.
Right? Well, he did that, and he suffocated, and he
because died. You broke his nose when he was,
yeah,
a kid? Oh, my God.
Yeah, I didn't mean to do that.
No, I'm not, I know you didn't. I know you didn't.
But that was a result of something that, if we never had that fight, the guy probably would have been alive today, possibly. Something else might have got him, too. Who knows?
Yeah, if he continued his bullying ways, he might have gotten it that way.
Yeah, but he might have gotten somebody else.
Who gave you the information, though? I mean, I don't want you feeling unnecessarily responsible. That doesn't sound too likely to me. Do you have some real solid information that...
That he died from the nose thing?
No, because he still can breathe through his mouth.
No, it was his girlfriend kind of told that story, and it just kind of floated around town. What happened to Dave, and I got it third or fourth hand.
Ah.
You know what?
Like, there was a correlation there.
I don't know. How old was he when that happened?
He's about 23.
I don't think so. I don't think
so. Well, not. You know, I don't carry that.
I'd like to have a little magic wand and lift that one off of you. It's not like he's a baby in a crib. He falls asleep. The human body has all kinds of signals that you're running out of oxygen that would set him upright immediately if he wasn't already breathing through his mouth because you, if you did anything to him, apparently you deviated his septum. No, I'd like to really lift that one off you if I can.
Yeah.
I don't believe that at all.
Think if he was going to die, he would have died the day he got punched, if at all.
Well, and not from that either, still not from a blow on his nose. And that just isn't going to stop a person from being able to breathe.
I mean, if he was bleeding to death, he might have suffocated like that.
Yeah, if he fell down, bashed his head in. But listen, I don't think that's true. Was this guy doing drugs?
Yeah, he hung up. But
oh, okay.
April is in Coffeyville, Kansas, east of the Rockies. Hi, April. Go ahead.
Hi. I actually just wanted to talk about when I was a freshman in high school, this group of girls bullied me for like a whole semester, and it was nonstop in between classes. It was horrible. And then finally one day I stood up to them, and then it was over. But then fast forward a couple years, I'm a junior in high school, and then I became the bully.
No.
Is that very common? I'm not a very mean person now. I'm not a mean person at all. I'm 28 and I have three kids, but for a brief time in high school, like, I turned into a very mean person, and I was the bully. Is that common?
Well, yeah, I think it really is common for people who have been bullied to turn into bullies. I think that's how the people who were bullying you got started. Somebody bullied them. Maybe their big brothers. Were these girls?
And who I bullied were
they, were they girls who were bullying you?
Uh-huh. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And then you were bullying girls.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe there was something in your own family that went on, too. Do you have a little sister, a big sister?
No, I'm an only child.
Hmm. Well, more importantly, how did you get over bullying?
You know, my aunt worked at the high school, and it was her approaching me saying, people are telling me that you're messing with their kids, that, like, their parents were calling in and complaining about me, and it was kind of that I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm a terrible person, and got me to stop.
And what happened after that? Did things go well for you or better for you?
Yeah, I went and I apologized to this one girl that I was really extra mean to. And I mean,
did she accept it?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Good.
I feel bad for her. She had like a hole in her heart, so she was really short. It was just terrible. I was such a terrible person. It was horrible. But yeah, after that, we were very civil, and anyone else that I ever had any altercations with, we all got over it, and it was like it was nothing. But does that mean I'm sick?
I think you should be proud of yourself.
She's changed.
Yeah, but you should be very proud of yourself. People become bullies. I was an intellectual bully. I used to make people cry in arguments with me.
You liked that, didn't you? You liked making them squirm.
Though. Oh, God.
I noticed that on my first interview with you. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, God. Well, you know, I have a certain verbal ability, and I did misuse it when I was young. And it's just really important that you've changed and that you've grown. And it also illustrates something that I mentioned earlier in the show, that the intervention of one adult can make such a huge difference.
Huge.
Especially
if
that adult is respected.
Absolutely. Well, Peter, we're going to come back in a moment. We're going to take final phone calls with you. It was this topic, of course, of the father in Texas whose little kid has been bullying other kids in school. Father said enough is enough. He made the kid go out into the streets holding a sign that says, I'm a bully. And that was his way of trying to get back at the little kid to humiliate him so that one day he would realize what it was like to interview and bully other kids. And, of course, Peter Bragan says that's probably not the greatest way to get a bully to stop. And so stick with us. We're coming back in just a moment with final phone calls with Peter Bragan on Coast to Coast. We invite all of you to take a look at our television program, Beyond Belief. Go to the website, beyondbelief.com. 10 days free to look at that and all the other programs that are available there online, beyondbelief.com. Okay, Dr. Peter Bragan with us, our final segment. So let's go to final calls here. Bill is in West Hartford, Connecticut. Hey, Bill, go ahead.
Yes, hi, George. Hi. Dr. Bragan. I have so much empathy and compassion for people who are bullied, because let me tell you, because of OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, that I've had since age 14, the summer before ninth grade, and I'm George Norrie's age, I'm 63 now, I had OCD and was bullied terribly from about half of the people at ninth grade junior high school, and also my high school, 10th grade and 11th grade in West Hartford, Connecticut. And then after grade 11, as of June, July 1967, I was admitted, fortunately for me, to the Institute of Living, which I know you've heard of. And my point point is the OCD rituals, in my case, sort of resembled, in a sense, Tourette's syndrome, in that because of touching my face, my eyes, ears, nose, mouth, hair, et cetera, because of anxiety and I think what's called not quite right feelings that would go away when I touch my face hundreds of times a day, if not thousands of times, kids can be cruel. So what I'm trying to lead up to is, after being at the Institute for 4 to 6 months and being picked on and teased and bullied there by patients my age and a little older, I was 17 and a half then, I decided to do, I didn't know at the time what I was doing, I know now what it is, for in retrospect, my own version of exposure and response therapy and delay therapy. I decided I'm going to try not to touch my face, go as long as I can. If I have to then touch it, then I'll touch my face. And after 6 to 9 months of the 2 years I was at the Institute of Living, my OCD rituals went away, at least those OCD rituals from the mid to late 1960s. And I went from where in 1967 someone called me a freak. A year and a half later, he said, Bill, you've done the best of any patient I've known here in this hospital. I don't know why you're still here. And a few months later, July 19th, 1969, I got discharged the day before the Apollo 11 moon landing.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, you fought yourself back. That's a good story, Peter.
Yes, it is. I'm glad. Did you feel you were helped at the Hartford Hospital?
I was at the Institute of Living, which is now connected to Hartford Hospital.
Yeah, Institute of Living in Hartford. Thank you for correcting me. Did you feel you were helped?
Yes, but let me tell you, since 1988, you're not going to like this, but this drug I'm going to mention in a second has not hurt me at all. I'm on Prozac, 20 milligrams of Prozac since 1988 with 2 milligrams of Klonopin and 45 milligrams of Buspar. The latter two are anti-anxiety drugs. And those three drugs have not hurt me at all. They've helped me along with the therapy and exposure response therapy I'm getting now.
Well, I wish you well. I think you know about my views on it, and I wish you well. And
it works for him. But it does work for a percent of people, doesn't it?
Well, I think it's very, very hard to know. It's very hard when you're on the drugs to know if they're helping you. Quite often people feel they're helping because when they try to stop them, they have such bad withdrawal reactions.
Is there like a placebo effect?
There's also a placebo effect. There's also a dulling of emotions effect. But I certainly wish this gentleman well.
He's a good guy. Bill, thanks. Let's go to Vince in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hi, Vince. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you.
Sure.
I think bullying can be a necessary evil. So to eliminate bullying will actually eliminate a natural thing we do have in society. So I look at it as a bullying tool for young men to become men, young boys to become men.
Interesting take. Peter,
yeah.
Let's get your reaction to that.
Well, you know, I know what you mean. You know, I certainly think that my determination to never be bullied was very, very important. I think it certainly was part of what made me this unusual person who's both very intellectually oriented but also takes very dangerous stands, which is unusual. And I've often thought that maybe my determination to stand up to bullies and play sports and so on played a role in this. But I also think back to the anxiety that I went through dealing with bullies. I don't know. I understand what you're saying, and I think it makes some sense. We certainly will never get rid of bullying totally, and certainly young men and women. Women as well as men, need to know how to stand up to aggression, to violence, to ridicule, to humiliation.
Do we know if children, Peter, let me ask you this real quickly. Do you know if children are born bullies or developed into a bully?
No, I don't think people are born bullies at all. I mean, we have just so much research and clinical experience as well on what goes on, you know, in folks who end up taking out violence on other people. You never look at their childhoods and think to yourself, I would have done better. I would have been a nicer guy. But let me finish my thought here, because, you know, he had a good thought, and it's a tough problem. But I think this is what I would conclude. life is always going to present threats and bullying. That doesn't mean we should condone it and not fight it, because civilization, whether it's the civilization of your local school or church or college or civilization of a country, always demands the constant standing up to bullies on the personal and political level. So that's my thought on that.
All right, let's go to Nate, Youngstown, Ohio, first-time caller. Hi, Nate, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I was calling basically to kind of maybe ask about how maybe people can get caught up in bullying and not really even know that they're partaking in it. What I mean by that is, like, you know, whether you're in school or the workplace, you know, there's, in my experience, there's always somebody who's been made out to kind of be like that pincushion. And everybody, one person starts it, and then everybody might, you know, add their two cents in at the same time. And, you know, you get caught up into bullying somebody, and you don't really know because you're so caught up into that conversation or that those actions,
maybe.
And, you know, it really doesn't hit you until maybe later after the fact when you see that person walking, you know, walking away, kind of hunched over, kind of depressed. You don't really realize at the time, hey, you know what I just did could have, it really may have ruined his day or upset him or something like that, you know?
Can someone be a bully, Peter, and not even know it?
Well, I think that what he's saying is he didn't know it at the time, and that it probably had to do with a kind of a, you know, a group mentality, a gang, on a lesser scale, a mob mentality. It's very easy for human beings to get caught up in a destructive group activity. It's and I think that's what he's describing. He got caught up with a lot of other people bullying, and that he was more involved in the social camaraderie, maybe, of the bullying than he was in thinking about the individual. But again, you know, to his credit, he saw it. And I suspect he didn't do that again. I think that's what he's describing. And so some bullying will take place where you're just following the leader or trying to be a part of a group. And I think a lot of these assaults by athletes, you know, on hapless individuals, you know, comes out of some twisted team spirit where they're all high on themselves. And maybe that's what sort of happened to him.
But you recommend, as I did in school, stand up against the bully.
Yes, I do. But again, we're from a younger generation, and me yet younger than you, and it can be extremely dangerous nowadays.
Nowadays, sure.
Some bullies are going to be armed. Some are going to be high on drugs. I don't think I could have done what I did as a kid, which is to stand up to a number of bullies and actually have.
Well, let me ask you this, though, Peter. I'm not sure the bully today is the one that's armed. I think the one that's armed is the one who's been pushed over the edge by being bullied.
Well, I think it's a judgment call. So, we've heard one story after another of the importance of standing up to bullies, your story, my story, callers. But I also don't want to push people to do things that may risk their own safety when it might be better to avoid some situations, because I want to be very cautious about that. I treasure your listeners and the people I work with in therapy. And all right, you and I have stood up to bullies, but not everyone's going to be successful.
No.
Not everyone has that direction. So I'm going to be a little bit more
cautious
about that, because, yeah, I'd rather see the adults standing up to these bullies and the people in charge and the police and so on than leaving it up to somebody who's being himself harassed or may have the power to stand up.
Is a road rager a bully?
Well, I think it's a form of bully that actually can turn into a horrible and violent bully if he ends up attacking somebody.
Yeah.
I think it all comes from this common denominator of not feeling good about yourself, commonly feeling humiliated. Somebody cuts you off and makes you feel like you know, crap or feel like you're worthless. And why should you let somebody do that to you? You don't even know that person. You don't know what they've been through. You don't know what drugs they're on, and you don't know how disturbed they may be. So why would you react to the stranger who cuts you off in a car? Only if you're not centered enough on your own value.
Let's go now to Jan in Ogden, Utah, west of the Rockies. Jan, go ahead.
Hi, can I tell you two brief stories?
Yeah, we'll get you in. Sure.
Okay. When I was in seventh grade, our bus pulled up to the school, and right ahead of us was a car, and this man pushed his son out of the car, and he was a classmate of mine, and he said, he just yelled for everybody to hear, if you're going to wet the bed like a girl, you're going to wear a dress like a girl. And this poor boy was standing there humiliated as his father drove away. And a teacher saw what had happened, and she called the principal, and the principal shepherded this little boy into the office. And we never saw him again. I guess he was put into foster care. I don't know. But I think that was the height of bullying by a parent.
Sure was.
And then when my own daughter was in sixth grade, she changed from being a happy, anxious to go to school little girl to fearful, and she would complain of stomach aches and things. And I kept asking her what was wrong, and finally she broke down and she started crying, and she told me that there was this boy at school that terrified her, and that he was always threatening her, and that he was threatening to do terrible things to her. And so my dad and I went to the school and talked to the principal, and the principal called this boy in, and he was 3 years behind in school, so he was much bigger and older than the other kids.
Okay.
And he said, you know, this woman could take you to court and have you charged with assault for the things you have threatened her daughter. And he said, I'll leave that up to her, but as far as I'm concerned, you do not ever say another word to this girl. If you see her in the hallway, you avert your eyes. And he said, and none of your friends can say or do anything to her. And nothing more ever happened to my daughter, and she returned.
So he listened. Most kids might not have listened. Peter, have you found, and thanks for that call, Jen, have you found that when kids are confronted with authority like that, they're going to still go ahead and do it?
No, I think that we're hearing consistently today about the importance of stopping bullying, and I think authority, principals have that authority. And I just don't see principals behaving that way by and large anymore. And
they're afraid of litigation.
Yeah, I think they're afraid of litigation. They're afraid of the school board getting mad at them there. And they're also they also don't see the schools anymore as a bastion of morality. They don't see the school's job as to be communicating morality and ethics, which means that the kids are learning that morality and ethics don't matter.
Well, you know, in our days in school, too, the teachers and the principal, by and large, really went out of their way to try to understand the kid and his family background and his parents. They knew these things. I mean, they knew if you were from a broken home. They knew if you had a problem. And I don't think that's the case anymore.
Well, I think it probably does vary from school to school, but I think you're right. I think our schools are becoming less and less personal, more and more factories trying to turn out the kids according to some standard from Washington, D.C., and it's harder and harder for teachers to even have the time, with all the papers they have to fill out, and the homework they have to grade to be with kids. And We do need to start building more real caring into our schools.
Josh is with us now in Halsey, Oregon. Go ahead, Josh.
Hey, how's it going, George?
Good, Josh. Thank you.
Hey, I just wanted to get doctor's take on my opinion of what's going on with the whole bullying situation. We hear a lot every day how it's become such a big problem. My daughter, a couple years ago, she would have been in the third grade, was sent home with a pamphlet from her school that explained to parents what to teach their children in the case that their child is being bullied, and it was complete pacifism. It was pretty ridiculous. They said to avoid the bully at all cost example. If you see a bully in one hallway, walk all the way around the school if need be.
Wow.
It even went as far to say if you're in a physical confrontation, to curl up into a ball and cover your head and ears and scream for help.
While he pummels you.
Right. And I think, you know, I was always taught, you know, you stick up for yourself. There's a time and a place for everything. My dad always said, you don't ever start a fight, but by God, if you're in one, you'd better finish it.
It sounds like a litigation thing to me.
It does. And without getting too political, you know, the largely liberal school systems, I almost got to ask yourself, why? Why are they teaching our children to be such pacifists?
They are afraid of legalese. Peter, we're almost out of time, my friend. So what's new with you these days?
What a question to ask me in front of millions of people.
That's right. Tell me. You traveled speaking? What?
Yeah, well, I speak. People can find it on my website. I speak around the country here and there. I think there'll come a time when I decide I'm going to stay home more and be with my wife and do more writing. But people can find it on the website where I'm going to be. And, I'm blogging on Natural News and Huffington Post. And
we're going to see you on one of our Beyond Belief TV shows.
Oh, I am so excited about that. Yeah. Folks, I'm flying out to Denver this weekend.
We're going to have some fun on that, Peter. Okay, you take care of yourself. Dr. Peter Bragan, great psychiatrist.